sneeze on a Monday, you sneeze for danger.
I'm sneezing for danger. I am sneezing for danger. Watch out, gentlemen.
Sneeze on a Tuesday, kiss a stranger. Watch out, gentlemen.
Yeah, again. Just, gentlemen, just watch out.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So, Katie is going to kick off with something that I'm fascinated and excited to hear about. Apparently, there are a lot of superstitions around the weekend.
This is the first for me. It's a top 10 superstitions for the weekend.
So like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and superstitions.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
So everyone works, well, not everyone.
Well, everybody's working for the weekend.
Yeah, everybody's working for the weekend. And look forward to the weekend. But superstitions from all over the world paint a very different picture. And
have people's bosses put these
instead of getting excited, you should be afraid.
Okay.
Very afraid, as they say. Or at least be careful.
If you can't be scared out of your mind, be cautious.
Right. Here's 10 superstitions about Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Okay.
So, here we go. Number 10, don't make fun of fairies.
Just don't.
Don't. They may be tiny and cute, but according to Irish, you should take fairies very seriously, particularly if it's a Friday.
Okay.
If you speak ill of fairies on a Friday, they will work some evil.
On the weekend.
Yeah.
They will squash your plans.
Yeah, the good news is that they have to be around to overhear you. The bad news is they're very small and you may not notice.
So just don't say anything.
Don't say on a Friday, forget it.
Yeah.
Remember, Fairy Friday is all good about fairies.
Yes, good about fairies. It's actually TGI fairies is what it is.
Also, according to the Irish, Friday.
All of them.
All Irish. Friday is the unluckiest day of the week, and it's particularly a bad idea to begin a journey.
Leave on Thursday, people.
Don't leave on a Friday. Everyone leaves on a Friday.
Yeah.
Move into a new house or begin a business or cut a new dress.
Okay.
And people in Thailand also believe Friday is a bad day to start building a house.
Well, probably because the people are going to be slacking all the next day.
Yeah,
right?
But it sounds like a bad idea to start any new project on a Friday. So
yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Monday. Wait till Monday.
Yeah.
Mull it over, but then don't go for it.
Yeah. There's also another one. There's a superstition in Thai culture not to have a funeral on a Friday.
Okay. Why is that? Because of the lack of luck on that? I mean, the person's dead. What could go wrong?
Because their word for Friday, suk, sounds like the same word for happy. And
I only want to be buried on a Friday. Then.
Oh my gosh. So it says you can't do that because you can't have the funeral on the Friday because that's a happy day. And so that's kind of a rude thing to do.
Uh-huh. Maybe I have some enemies who are coming to the funeral.
And then also another part of the superstition, this is just like another aside here, is that when you're a baby, your parents should shave your head and put the hair under a tree so you won't be so stubborn in life.
On the regular or like just one time?
A one-time deal.
Every Friday. Shave them.
And speaking of shaving, the Italians believe that shaving on a Friday will bring ill health.
Really? Does that explains these kind of rugged looking Italian beards?
Unless it's the first Friday in March, then it's A-okay.
Then shave? What?
Yeah, and then it says...
So our barber's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
We gotta change this
Another superstition says that if you shave your head on a Saturday, you'll always be in debt.
Okay.
So that leaves only five other the other days to shave.
So as they have all of America's been shaving.
So I think somebody's like, oh, it's bad luck because they just don't want to shave on the yes, Friday and Saturday.
Is it still Italian? Maybe they just don't want to shave.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. Be hairy.
Let's see. According to the Chinese, men with messy facial hair are unlucky.
Huh. You know what? I don't know a lot of Chinese men and mm-hmm. how they groom.
Yeah.
But I've never really seen a lot of, like, crazy facial hair on Chinese guys.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's a thing.
Or maybe even if they don't believe it, maybe it's just something that never took off.
Yeah.
So
that's
not a look. It's not a look. But here's a little a rhyme to help you plan your week about luck.
Okay.
And hair. Cut it on a Monday to attain health. Cut it on a Tuesday to gain wealth. Cut it on Wednesday to hear the news.
Cut it on... Oh, excuse me? Is this ear hair? Or is this just hair in general to hear
ear
the
hair.
News?
Okay. Yeah, cut it on Thursday to get a new pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Cut it on a Friday, there will be sorrow. Cut it on Saturday, and you'll see true love tomorrow. Cut your hair on a Sunday, and the devil will be with you all week.
Wow.
It doesn't really rhyme.
No, I thought it was going to rhyme.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like see a penny, pick it up kind of thing.
Also, now, it's another one. It's bad luck to cut your fingernails on a Friday or Sunday.
Really?
Saturday, you can slip it in.
Okay. I know it's just bad practice to try to hit the nail salon on a Friday because everyone and their sister mm-hmm. is in there. I try to go on a Tuesday or a Monday. Oh, no, sorry, not Monday. Monday, they have the mani-pedi specials. Tuesday is better.
Yeah. And you're warned not to throw away your fingernail clippings.
That is something I grew up with.
Yes.
You have to be really careful how you dispose of them because people can get them and use them against you.
Yes, because if somebody has a little piece of you, then they have a power to put a curse or a spell on you.
Yeah, they could put it into like a doll or something like that, and then, you know, you're fucked, basically.
So you want to take them and burn them or bury them.
Well, that's really dramatic. We would just always put them in paper towel and throw them away or flush them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right.
Didn't burn them or bury them. And that's weird. I think I still dispose of my fingernails. I don't throw them in the trash. I always flush them.
Do you?
Or rinse them away. If I'm clipping my nails, which is rare because I usually go to a nail salon.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm clipping my nails, I do it over the sink and then I rinse the sink out. Or I'll clip them and put them in something like toilet paper and throw them away.
I clip them into a little paper towel
and
then I wad it up and throw it away.
Huh, that's interesting.
Let's see. Finding the first flower of spring on a Saturday is bad luck. Finding it on a Friday or Sunday is very good.
I'm sorry, how can you not find it? Are you looking for the damn thing?
Yeah.
Or is it just you see it?
If you see the flower on a Friday, there's wealth in your future.
What flower?
The first flower of spring. That's when...
Where?
You have a yard.
Okay. Sorry. There are apartment dwellers here. We're like, what?
You know, or
is someone delivering flowers?
Or do you have like a little window box for flowers or something?
Okay.
Or maybe your development
has a flower. I've just never seen
flower.
One flower on its own. Like, yo!
Well, whatever.
Stamp it out.
The first one that actually comes up and blooms.
Mm-hmm. Don't look at it.
Don't look at it.
Don't think about it.
Don't look at it on a Saturday.
Wait.
But if you see a flower on a Sunday, it's excellent luck for weeks.
Okay. The first flower only.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
And sneezing, there's...
Don't do it.
Sneezing, don't do it, because sneeze on a Monday, you sneeze for danger.
I'm sneezing for danger. I am sneezing for danger. Watch out, gentlemen.
Sneeze on a Tuesday, kiss a stranger. Watch out, gentlemen.
Yeah, again, just watch out.
Sneeze on a Wednesday, sneeze for a letter. Sneeze on a Thursday, something better. Whatever.
What is that, a package?
Just fill in whatever.
Whatever you want.
Sneeze on a Friday, sneeze for sorrow. Sneeze on Saturday, see your sweetheart tomorrow. Everybody, so why do you have to wait till Sunday?
Yeah, who's seeing their sweetheart on a Sunday? Is it in church?
Sneeze on a Sunday and the devil will have domination over you all week.
That I heard growing up about, you know, it's like anything you do on a Sunday,
devil.
Definitely Satan.
Yeah.
It's just like the chances of you not having Satan with you the entire week are minimal.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you just stay the hell in bed. And then you get out of bed, go to church, and go back to bed. There's nothing you can do. Play cards, listen to music, play dice. We were always saying, oh, you can't play dice on Sunday. We are small kids in the 70s. Who's playing dice?
Right.
Who's rolling dice?
And it's like, and what's dice? And they're usually part of a board game.
Yes, and they were like, well, I guess they were thinking like, you know, dice on the corner kind of thing. Because older people were talking
about gambling. That's what it is.
Our grandparents, it's like, do you see us throwing dice anywhere? Also, dominoes. Again, we didn't really play dominoes that much growing up. And cards.
Mm.
All gambling.
Right. Yeah.
All
don't
things
do it
around
all.
Gambling.
It's the idea. Like, people were not supposed to do things on Sunday, and it all changed.
But you don't it's a generational thing. It's like if they were like, don't bet on horses on Sunday. It's like, we don't bet on horses ever.
Yeah.
Like, at no point in our lives have we ever bet on a horse.
Right.
I think today being Sunday is not going to push me into it.
Yeah. Let's see. There is another thing for Fridays. A child born on Friday is doomed to misfortune.
Wow. I mean, really?
Yeah.
I guess squeeze your legs tight, ladies.
Yes.
Like.
There was something else here that they say. It's not good to hit an animal with the same whip that is used to discipline a child. You know.
I mean, really, maybe don't whip either of them?
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to go with that.
Oh, and then there, you know, Good Friday in the Christian religion is the Friday before Easter.
Yeah. What happens on Good Friday? I completely forgot.
Good Friday is a day of reflection and being somber because that's a day that Christ is crucified. And so you're not supposed to run around and scream and yell and play.
Okay.
And then at 3 o'clock, you're supposed to have a moment of silence.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I worked for a man, and I could have sworn one day on Good Friday, he came out and said, "Well, we got him."
What?
And I was just like, "What?" Like, he was making a joke. And every year after that, I was like, "Hey, it's Good Friday. What do you got to say to me?" And he's like, "I never said that." He denies saying that.
Really?
I insist that he said it.
And you want him to say it again.
I always want him to say it every year. And he's like, "I would never say something like that. What are you talking about?" And I'm like, "I know you said it." And it may have been he was talking about something else altogether.
But you
and
interpreted it
as...
You went from A to C.
Because it was, I was like, "Oh, it's 3 o'clock on Friday. Good
we
Friday."
We got him.
And
That's terrible.
So I know he said it, but it was probably about something totally different.
A fly or a deal he was making somewhere.
But for years, I would say, "Come on, say it." And he's like...
Was he like, "I'm going to have to let you go"?
Basically.
"I'm going to have to ask you to leave."
Yeah. And his wife is like, "Stop saying that to him. You're upsetting him."
I wait for this every year, lady. I need to hear this. You don't know.
All right. Anyway, but there's so many superstitions around Good Friday. You should avoid hammers.
Why?
Nails and wood.
Are you kidding me?
No.
I'm not going to be crucified. It's not, like, really?
Don't get lost on Good Friday because no one will find you till Easter.
Really?
And you're not supposed to run and laugh. That's what I was taught.
They really, this is why I think as a child you start to, or at least I did, start to stray from religion. Because I'm like, where's all the fun stuff? Because when you're really young, it's fun.
Oh, hang on. There's something really great about Good Friday.
Okay.
If you happen to die...
Right up?
You go right to heaven. You don't have to go to purgatory.
Immediately.
Do not pass. You just go, boom.
Wow. Really?
You go straight to heaven.
Why?
Instead of working it off. Because you died on Good Friday.
Wow.
Like the Savior.
So people try to kick it then?
And if you cut your hair on Good Friday, you won't have headaches for a while.
Okay.
For a whole year, actually.
Well, that's quite some time. I mean, avoid hammers and nails?
Yeah.
Oh, people. Oh, yeah, I forgot these are superstitions.
Yes, okay. Well, yeah.
So they don't have to make any sense whatsoever.
And, of course, Friday the 13th is the most unlucky.
I feel like people in the Wiccan religion believe that it's lucky, though.
Yeah, because the Knights of Templar are the ones who...
That makes total sense. They're extremely relevant right now.
Yeah,
extremely.
Yeah.
Like in 2017 in the West.
That is the day King Philip ordered the arrest of every Templar in France on charges of heresy.
Okay,
their property
again?
Was seized and subject to medieval, and they were subject to medieval torture. So it was a bad day.
For them.
Capone would agree. He was arrested and sentenced to jail on Friday the 13th. Tupac Shakur died on the 13th as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So,
I mean, that's a weird assemblage of people: Knights Templar, Al Capone, and Tupac Shakur. And that's the rationale for this?
Yeah. But, the weekend.
Okay. That everybody's working for. I have some Tales from Dare Campfire.
From Dare Campfire is the segment wherein we find ghost stories, urban myths, legends.
Yeah. Fake lore, folklore.
Scary stuff, and we tell it around the digital campfire.
So gather around. This is from Weird U.S. I found this awesome map. It was a cryptozoological map of the United States. And it had a lot of creatures on it.
And where they're from.
Didn't know. It says where they're from. But there were things that I'd never heard of before. So I wanted to present to you today for the segment, the Lovelands Frogman.
The Lovelands Frogman.
Yeah.
Okay, what's
so
that?
So this is a tale from the 70s. So get ready. It's going to be way out.
Okay.
In March of 1972, on two separate occasions, two Ohio policemen, this is in Loveland, Ohio, saw what became known as the Loveland Frogman.
All right.
And it was investigated by 14 investigators. You remember 14 times? 14 times makes the Inquirer look like, you know, Time Magazine.
Oh, geez.
So it's like
okay.
Ufology, cryptozoology, everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So 14 investigators, Ron Schaffner and Richard Mackey, interviewed the officers and investigated the incident. The first incident took place 1 a.m. on March 3rd, 1972. It was a cold, clear night. Officer Ray Shockey, which is the best name ever.
Officer Ray Shockey
was en route to Loveland.
He was assigned a taser.
This is 1972.
Oh.
1972. He thought he saw a dog beside the roadway in a field in the Twite Wee Road.
Oh.
That's a cool name.
Yeah.
But then the quote-unquote thing stood up. Its eyes were illuminated by the car lights. It looked at him for an instant, turned, and then leapt over the guardrail. Shockey watched it go down an embankment and into the Little Miami River. He described it as weighing about 60 pounds.
It was
quite big. Standing 3 to 4 feet tall, having textured leathery skin and a face like a lizard or a frog.
Wow.
So, Shockey drove to the police station and then returned with Officer Mark Matthews to look for evidence. And all they turned up was scrape marks showing where it had leapt over the side and gone down to the river. So, that happened in March 3rd. On March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, always a sketchy day for sightings
in my mind.
Because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on drinking. Officer Matthews was driving outside of Loveland when he had a similar experience. He saw what he thought was an animal lying in the middle of the road.
Okay.
So he's like, okay, it's roadkill. So he gets up to remove it to the side of the road. And then as soon as he opened his car door and it squeaked, the animal heard the noise, got up into a crouch position,
ooh,
like a football player.
Ooh.
I know. And it hobbled to the guardrail, lifted its leg over the fence, keeping an eye on Matthews the whole time. So it says, perhaps it was the funny smirk on his face, but Matthews decided to shoot it. He didn't like the cut of his jib.
Yeah, like the cut of his jib.
And he missed. And then he was still, the thing just kept running. Matthews later told that he felt the creature stood more upright.
And grinning.
Yeah. Was like, now, mother. Shockey described it as frog-like or lizard-like. So they said that because these two guys reported this, they said it was really difficult for them afterwards. People made fun of them. They gave them a hard time throughout the city. There was a newspaper story that said, please don't identify us, but they identified them anyway. They didn't have any anonymity. And then finally, they both said, look, it never happened. They didn't want to talk about it anymore. So this is the Loveland
Frog. Leave me alone. No, yeah. Nothing happened. I was just...
They said why they debunked the story. They said they didn't really know why. I guess maybe they felt pressure.
Okay.
About what they saw. But they both described it as something that was between 3 and 5 feet tall and looked like a frog man. So it's the Loveland Frog Man. I love
That's
stuff like
amazing.
That. This is like super regional tales.
Right. And what did they see? I mean, I don't know. Because you see weird stuff out there.
And you don't know what it is.
I saw a frog once that I thought it was a tree stump. In my pond, in my backyard,
it was
when
that
I was a
big?
Kid. Yeah, it was, I mean, not a huge tree, but a tree nonetheless.
It was like flat and round kind of looking.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I got to tie my shoelace on my sneaker, and I wanted to put it up on the stump.
Obviously, the stump didn't appreciate that.
And as I approached the stump, it jumped into the water.
See?
And I was like, wow, that was a big frog.
Yeah. You see, I mean, it's interesting to me because, you know, animals have evolved on this planet to kind of be invisible to anything that might be a threat to it, and that includes us. So sometimes you see an animal's camouflage, and it works. And then when it moves, it's creepy.
Yeah, and what if we just have a very thin veil over certain parts of the world?
Yeah.
And there's like a whole other reality, and sometimes these creatures come in.
I wish it were that way. I like the idea of like, because Alien Predator are two of my favorite franchises, and there's a concept in Predator that you can only see them when you have their mask on. Because they can cloak themselves.
Yeah.
So what if we simply cannot, as you're saying, what if we simply don't have the visual acuity to see these things?
Or
when they're really there.
It's certain, like, vibrations from the earth in certain areas that have, like,
that bring these things out?
That are very thin. I don't know. I'm trying to just, I'm making up a thing.
They're very thin. I'm open to these ideas. I'd like the world to be a little more interesting.
I like a little vortex is what I'm trying to say.
A tiny vortex?
A tiny vortex.
And things come through?
Yeah.
Like Frogman.
Yeah, but they can only stay in this one little area.
For a little bit of time?
Yeah, because it's too thick otherwise. It's like,
I like it. Or maybe it's like, you know, Princess Leia.
A hologram?
Yeah.
No, I like them actually.
The actual thing.
I want the actual thing here.
This is why these things are running like hell. Imagine if you were on your frog planet chilling. Next thing you know, you're on like Highway 207.
Yes. Yeah.
Some guy shooting at you.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably what's going on with Bigfoot.
Yeah. He's like, I keep coming out. I'm minding my own foraging.
Yeah.
Next thing you know.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you have?
They got the four R's.
What's the four R's? Rehearse, record, rinse, or repeat.
To all that was 40th Street. Hashtag Golf Life NYC.
So I have a little bit of a reading from How to Look and Feel Younger.
Okay.
This is a book in a series of... Amy Vanderbilt's success program for women.
Okay.
This is from the 50s, 1950.
Wow. This is how you become a successful as a woman.
Yes. Yeah, it's a program. It's a whole series, a stack of books that I took from my mother's shelf.
Okay.
How to Look and Feel Younger. And this part is under A Matter of Beauty.
Okay.
And it's about...
It's so dry, Matter of Beauty.
Yes.
Concerning attractiveness.
Yes. It's about your dressing table.
Okay. Your vanity. Which I don't have. Like, when I was a little girl, I remember my mom had something like it.
Mm-hmm.
Although she's not that organized. But I remember some of my friends' moms having serious vanities. Yeah. Where, like, they actually sit there. There are, like, three mirrors.
Yes.
It was like Betty Davis in a film.
Yes. Well, your dressing table is the clue to a good part of your outward charm.
It's the clue, huh?
Yes. Its position and its contents are of exceeding importance in helping you to present... to the world, the youngest, most attractive face possible.
What does that mean by the position of it?
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to get into
it. Yes. Which, when you achieve it, will make you feel wonderful. First of all, your dressing table would be placed before a window, if possible, or at least next to a window.
For natural light.
So that all the possible daylight shines upon your face and not in the mirror.
I remember that when you're younger and... Well, my mom forced me to go to Barbizon, so I had a hellish experience with makeup. Mm-hmm. But they were always like, think about where you're putting your makeup on and where you're going.
Right.
So if you're going to be in natural light, put your makeup on in natural light. If you're going to be in a place that's dark, put your makeup on in a place that's going to be dark.
Right, right. Next, you should have a lighting arrangement which also shines on your face and are completely, if not devastatingly, revealing.
I want to be lit from the top and the top only. I do not want to be lit from underneath. Don't even play with
me. The makeup mirrors in stage dressing rooms are the epitome of this desirable state. It is possible to achieve the same result in a slightly less dark manner with a pretty dressing table, which is still equipped to reveal every blemish, makeup error, or stray hair every time you sit before it.
Do you remember the mirrors that were around when we were teens that were lit? They were like the round mirrors.
The bulbs around
them. And the bulbs around them? No. I don't like to see that much.
And they're magnified so you see everything.
Yes.
You feel terrible.
You feel terrible. That made me feel worse.
To add to this general premise and... really achieve as near perfection as a mortal woman is likely to do.
Are you kidding me?
You should have a good big magnifying mirror for doing detailed jobs of makeup.
What's the detail work?
That's where you go detail back. Face.
I love any scene in a movie where the star is having makeup put on and the makeup person's like, oh, I'm going to be like, no, keep working. Keep going.
Yeah. Damn it.
There's still time.
The kind has an ordinary hand mirror on its back is the best of all. You can look at the back of your head every time you sit at your dressing table.
Huh? I check my fro from the back minimally.
I don't even look. If you
just assume it's okay, right?
It's fine.
You brushed it. Is there anything weird back there?
Yeah. If you are possessed of such facilities for makeup and doing your hair, you will be able to be sure you will look even better to the rest of the world.
Okay. And then thereby achieving success.
Yeah. Which hasn't magnifying eyes or brilliant lights to shine upon your face. Then you do to yourself what you've... when you finished making up under these properly rugged circumstances.
I have found... because you
That's
always...
That's terrible.
You always do good makeup.
I try.
I do makeup sometimes, and I feel like whenever I wear, people are staring at me.
Yeah.
So it makes me uncomfortable.
Yes.
I'm not saying I look fantastic, but I look better than I need to look. And it draws, I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, it draws too much attention. Like, I feel like it's too obvious. But it's not. This is in my mind.
Yeah.
Because this is New York. And you see people, women walking around in New York who are flawless.
Yes.
Who look like, at any moment, if a film crew rolled up, they would be ready.
Right.
They don't need to touch or anything like that. I admire those women. I just don't have the time for it. And I don't like to look that great.
Yeah.
I just don't. I like to look new, you know, fairly neutral.
Just a little brush up of whatever's going on.
Just keep it light.
The thing is that they're like you magnifying light up your face like a flame, and then you
put on that makeup
and you make it flawless.
I like, what is it for touch ups?
Yeah,
what, for tight jobs?
Yes. In there.
That's amazing. I can't imagine living in that time. Like, your mom and her peers probably took that very seriously. Mm-hmm. This is a series of books.
It is a series of books.
It's not a pamphlet.
You had to make yourself, as a woman at that time especially, your outward appearance
meant
was
a big
deal.
And think about what materials they were working with in the 50s. It is not the kind of the makeup that we have now that's light, easy to control.
Yeah.
Like, you really had to know what you were doing back then. I'm amazed back then that women had their nails done, because I can't imagine that the nail lacquer back then lasted for more than like a minute.
Yeah.
It's hard now, and we have like advanced technology on our side. And what was when we were growing up, everyone's mom wore foundation.
Mm.
Even my mom, who is really nonconformist, but, you know, get pushed into it. Everyone else is wearing foundation. She's wearing foundation.
Yeah.
And we used to have these, people would come over for Mary Kay parties, and I, as a girl, I would watch these women be like, it could take you 45 minutes to put on your makeup. I'm like, F this, I'm out of here.
Yeah. No,
what are the boys doing?
Yeah, you got it.
They haven't even washed their hands.
15 minutes, if that.
Yes, 15 minutes, a quick job. But once again, we have better materials than they used to back then. That's fascinating. Thank you for bringing that piece of etiquette.
Yes.
So I have here some advice on advice.
Ah.
But this is Canadian advice on advice.
Oh, advice on advice is a segment wherein we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we give advice on that advice.
Yeah. So this is Canadian advice on advice.
Okay.
The question. I was hired by a construction company that is thorough about its hiring process.
Thorough?
Yes.
Okay.
1 week in at a division meeting, I discovered, to my horror, that a former employer who I failed to list on my resume was working for the same company.
Oh!
Snap, right?
No.
The person fired me previously and will undoubtedly be in contact with my supervisor, who shares his same role as project manager. So a previous unhappy project manager has shown up in the new company.
Oh, my God, what a bummer.
I know. Oh. It gets worse. My tenure with that former company lasted 3 months. I left it off my resume purposely and fudged the employment dates of my other jobs to account for the gap.
Oh, no.
I know.
What
do I do now? So it wasn't a problem until I got to that last sentence where the person...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with leaving employment off.
Mm-hmm.
Your resume... And for someone like me, I cannot list every single job that I've had. It would be like 10 pages.
Mm-hmm.
Because, not because I'm amazing, but because a lot of the jobs have been short-term.
Right.
And you move on.
Right.
You're at a place for 6 months and you're like, I don't want this. It doesn't work out. You move on. But then they lied about the dates of their other employment to cover the 3 months.
Because this is the whole thing that it's like, if you're not working, it's like, what were you doing? Were you on the lam?
Yeah. It's like, on the lam, totally.
Were you burying bodies?
Yeah.
You know, what were you doing?
Were you just hanging out? And we don't appreciate that either. Are you enjoying life?
It's like,
were you traveling?
Yeah. Were you raising children?
Yeah.
What happened? Things? What happened?
Did you get sick?
What happened to you?
And you don't want to tell us about it? So... In any case.
But it's such like a mark of like everyone's just like, it's like the sting of having a blank
spot.
Being
unemployed.
Oh my God.
I think that personally, I think that a resume doesn't have to show every single thing that you've done like consecutively,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there should be. If you did something for 3 months
mm-hmm.
and it's not relevant to the job
right.
that you have now, or you don't want them to contact that person.
Yeah.
What difference does it make?
Yeah.
All right. So the first answer is Canadian advice. You get two choices
mm-hmm.
from an associate lawyer. Okay. So you lied on your resume. Dishonesty is serious and it can get you fired. Whether it amounts to grounds for dismissal involves a weighing of the nature and the degree of dishonesty. This is Canada. So there's a little leeway here. It is viewed on a continuum. And not all lies amount to grounds for dismissal.
Mm.
I wonder what ground... I mean, this is like a omission?
This is, yeah, a lie of omission, but the thing is...
But then they change the dates of the other things. That's the problem for me. So it's one thing if I, you know, I left off, hey, you know it. And then I change the dates of the other podcasts I'm working on to cover that time.
Yeah.
I feel like the date change is wrong. Just be honest. about the gap, and maybe no one will know.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be looking at your resume. I don't think they're going to drill down and be like, I see there were, you know, 90 days here where you didn't work.
And all right. Now, this other guy is working as a project manager. Sure, the two may talk or whatever, but is the other guy going to really drill, hey, tell me about those hire days?
Yeah.
You know, it may not even happen.
He might even care.
Well, they might just, if I knew, like, think about that. If you knew somebody's working at your company, somebody you don't like, you're just going to be like, oh, they suck.
Probably won't do anything.
Yeah, right.
Because that might reflect negatively upon me.
Right. So, but the worst somebody would do is they suck.
They suck. But you have to remember that, and this comes up in the advice later on, I hadn't thought about this either, is if you are the employer, you are bound, at least in the U.S., sounds like it is in Canada too, you cannot, there are only a certain amount of things you can say.
Mm.
You cannot, if you fired someone, you can say, I hired that person, and yes, I fired them, but you may not be able to go into the reasons why you did that. That might be confidential. So an employer may terminate an employee for cause with reasonable notice and pay if the employee was dishonest during the recruitment process. If an employer is faced with a wrong termination lawsuit, the employer can argue that the employee made false or fraudulent statements. But the burden is on the employer to prove that the representation was false, the employee knew it was false, and the employer relied on the representation to do the hiring. Mm-hmm. So the employer would have to be like, I only hired him based on the extra, whatever, 45 days that he or she did at each of the other jobs.
Yeah.
Which would be weird.
Yeah.
It says leaving something off the resume is not significant, but lying about employment dates can cause a problem. The law carves out exceptions, especially when the quote-unquote fudging is not significant. Dishonesty is never met with kindness. However, the threshold to fire an employee for cause is high.
Yeah.
So they might not be able to get rid of you either way. That's the first answer.
Right.
Second answer is Albert Einstein once said, whoever is careless with the truth in small matters cannot be trusted with important matters.
Depends.
This person really wanted to get a job and get paid, it sounds like. Yeah. That was the motivation. I don't think the motivation was to be like, ha-ha.
I think also it is a repetitiveness and a consistency and a pattern. Mm-hmm. If you're continually lying about things, all kinds of things small, and if everyone's catching you in small lies, maybe you shouldn't be trusted.
I think this person panicked.
If you do, on occasion, a couple of these things in order for a greater good, what? I don't think
to pay the rent.
Yeah, you don't punish the event, you punish the pattern.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
He's saying the second piece of advice says, your situation is creating a strain for you because you are not truthful. Perhaps not so much with respect to not listing, but fudging the dates. Sadly, you're not alone. One statistic suggests that 46% of resumes contain some false information. Mm-hmm. I have never put false information on my resume because I feel like, hey, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this doesn't work for you, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it's not supposed to work out. It says more good news is that your new manager has likely formed a first impression of you already. So basically, unless you've done something criminal or screw up on the job, it's unlikely that your former manager will even say anything.
Yeah, right.
The former manager may not want people to know that they fired you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So another option says to tell the manager the truth. I don't know about that one.
No, I would not say
anything. If it doesn't come up, let sleeping dogs lie.
I say, because you don't know what this other guy is.
Well, he said some leaders see it as a sign of respect or courage. Some people might see it that way as being honest. Other people will be like, dude, why are you even bringing this up? Now I have to do something about this. Mm-hmm. Now you put me in a position where I have to make a decision about you, and I was happy with your work, and so was everybody else. But now we got this going on.
Yeah.
And now I'm wondering why Joe Schmo, who fired you before, hasn't said shit to me. Now I'm wondering about my entire organization. I might just go home.
Is everything a lie?
Am I in the Matrix?
Don't feel guilty about it. It's fine.
I just forget about it.
And as you get older, sometimes you like forget all the dates.
Every time I have to fill out something that is, because I have my resume, but whenever I have to fill out an employment form, like I worked for a university and they just were really old school. They had a really long form that you had to fill out and put in all the dates. I'm like, I don't know this stuff, man. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that far back and I'm not sure. Yeah. I just start putting things like summer.
Yeah.
2012.
I'm not exactly sure.
I'm not sure.
I go back to some dates.
Yeah. And here's my resume, by the way. Why am I filling out a form in 2017?
I know.
Why?
Oh, the forms. When they give you the form to fill out.
Should literally be, I thought about this for doctors and for employers, it should be like the common app. Remember that back in the day? Yep. You just fill out one form everyone can get the information there.
Walk out of the place if they give you a form to fill
out. Yes, just leave. Just run.
Here.
All right, what do you have?
Hey, You Know It is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. Gets pretty dry in this studio. And you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying a gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
Robot news.
Oh, awesome. So we'd like to report on the robot apocalypse, which it must be happening
right
now.
It's happening.
And we can't even realize it.
Yeah, because of our hey, overlords, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Hey. Hi.
Yeah, how do you like the podcast?
What can we do for
you? What can we do for you?
Yes.
We're reporting on you.
So, Agility Robotics introduces Cassie.
Who's Agility? Are they against Boston Dynamics?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, a spinoff of Oregon State University. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so that is competition.
Yeah, yeah. So, Cassie is a dynamic bipedal robot.
That's what they say.
Which can be used for
search and rescue,
disaster relief, mm-hmm. and long-term delivery of packages.
But long-term delivery of packages?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
But that's what they say. Okay,
sure.
So this is a shiny new bipedal robot named Cassie.
I'd like a matte finish. Please.
Cassie is a dynamic walker, meaning that it walks...
Oh, great. Good for you.
It walks much more like humans do.
Okay. Is that the best way to walk? Is that the best that evolution has to offer?
I don't think it's the best, but it looks like a human walking, so what's the next thing?
You know what I'd like? Roller skates. Oh. Xanadu. You know, long-term deliver that.
Xanadu.
Yeah.
It makes it better at handling the kind of diverse and complex terrain that we walk over all the time without even thinking.
Okay. That's not true. I do think about quite a lot where I'm walking in New York.
Talent that's going to be mandatory for robots that want to tackle the different environments and situations that they'll need to master mm-hmm. to be actually useful around people.
Okay.
The picture of this, it is...
Is it frightening?
It is just from the pelvis down.
Excuse me?
Yeah. So it's... There's no torso. There's no torso, head, arms.
It's just legs.
It's legs and the pelvic region.
And what do you put on top of it?
A package? It's just showing how it can walk.
Okay.
So just... It's like bottom half of a robot walking like a human. And her name is Cassie.
Great. Why Cassie? Does it stand for something?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Somebody
That's
has
so a, weird.
Some kind of... It's some kind of inside joke, I would imagine.
Is it, someone's ex-girlfriend? Yeah. Is it hooked up to anything?
Yeah,
look,
we only got the good part of Cassie.
Yeah, the important part.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it walk on its own or is it hooked up to something?
On its own.
Oh my goodness.
It just goes.
It's just a torso running down the street.
And it's just a typical pace for walking.
Yeah. This is like a nightmare.
Without constantly falling over, which is, you know, a big problem with robots.
Yeah, well, they've eliminated the top half.
So it's astonishing.
Wow. Weird.
Cassie can walk on dirt, grass.
You know what would be astonishing? Just the feet. Just get that going.
Oh.
The ankles down. That's the robot I want.
And balancing on a wobbly deck surrounded by an alarming amount of water.
Huh? Can it carry us? Can we sit on top of it?
I guess that's the next part, but it's
when
got
we're tired?
This walking motion over things. That's what they're getting down
okay.
there.
Put a basket on top or a nice chair, barca lounger. Get that going.
It's outside in the rain.
Okay.
So it looks a bit more like an ostrich than a human.
Weird.
So
I'm gonna have to Google this and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
What I'm imagining and what you described, I'm sure they are two very different things.
Yeah, they designed it her to be agile, efficient, and robust.
It sounds like those in RoboCop 2.
Yeah.
Where it's just like the legs,
yes.
walking around with guns on top of it.
Yeah, basically. It has 3 degrees of freedom hip. Allowing it to move its legs forward and backward, side to side, and rotate at the same time.
Can it boogie? Can it get down?
And with powered ankles, it can stand in place without having to constantly move its feet.
Power ankles?
Power ankles.
And 3 degrees of hip?
Yeah.
That's a band right there. That's a tour.
Power ankles.
Yes, power ankles.
That is my new band name.
3 Degrees of Hip, I'm going with that one. That is awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty
and creepy.
Yeah.
I have some good news for all of you Jeff Goldblum fans out there.
Oh, my gosh. We're still a little bit stung about Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, we tried to go see Jeff Goldblum at the Carlisle. It's got to be like 3 years ago. And we got there and they were like, all, you know, first come, first serve for the seats. There were empty seats.
Jeff
and they
Goldblum,
were like, not for you.
Jeff and the Mildred Schnitzer Orchestra.
Yes, which we did not see.
Yes, this was it's a small room, an intimate setting. He was going to play the piano and sing songs with the orchestra. There are a few tables and that are outrageously expensive, but there are some seats at the bar which are first come, first served.
But not for us.
And in our price range. We get there, there's the empty seats, and we're told...
They're restricted.
No, they're for the artist's guests.
The artist's guests.
But it's first come, first served, and we're here.
No, we were first come, but we were not first served. We were not served at all. We were turned away.
Turned away, and I put on heels.
Yep, at the door.
At the door, outside the building.
Before getting in.
Yes.
We might be able to see him, though, in this, because it's a film. He is going to be in Jurassic World 2.
No! Why are they doing this?
Jurassic World 2, he signed on to do it. He, by the way, still looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I don't know if he's drinking the blood of young virgins or what's going on. But I saw a still from the next Jurassic World. It's going to be out in June 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shows, it's a frame, a young girl standing before the colossal skull of a triceratops skeleton and what appears to be a lavish museum exhibit. On display are other predatory dinosaurs in addition to the remains of the Indominus Rex, was the ridiculous thing that they made for the Jurassic World movie. It doesn't say who the girl is, but they think this takes place in the future and it is the daughter of the stars, Bryce Dallas Howard, who was wearing that ridiculous wig that off-white getup.
And heels.
And heels. And Chris Pratt.
I like Chris Pratt.
I want to. So anyway, I guess they had a kid. That's what they're saying. Those two characters had a kid. Although, it's bizarre to me because I know, yeah, maybe in the movies, but a woman, the character that Bryce Dallas Howard plays, does not get together with Chris Pratt.
No.
And does not get knocked up by Chris Pratt.
No.
That doesn't happen. So we don't know who the girl is. Maybe she's a descendant of John Hammond. We have no idea, but we know that the movie is going to happen in June of 2018, and that Jeff Goldblum will be reprising his role as Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Coming by, just doing science. Saying this isn't a good idea again.
This is still not a good idea.
It has never been a good idea.
Did you not hear me the first time?
In 1, 2, 3, and 4.
So there you go. Little news about our boy Jeff Goldblum.
Very nice.
All right, what do you have?
Well, in light of all this hubbub about a certain airline who dragged a passenger off the plane.
They're just not winning.
Oh, my God. What were they thinking?
I have no idea. And then at the end of it, it turned out that the flight wasn't overbooked. Like, all this other stuff happened. And they dragged this poor guy, this doctor, off the plane and injured him.
Yeah.
He will probably be getting his own plane out of this.
Oh, yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
But it's, the thing is, airlines regularly overbook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand.
I
don't get it either. And then they regularly ask people to give up their seat and then we'll give them compensation for it. And it's like, and we've all been there where it's like, we'll give you $50, $100 if you get on the next flight.
One time we got lucky and we got... they put us in a 5-star resort one night in Jamaica. So we were right next to the airport. I was like, this is great. And then when we went the next night, they were like, do you want to do it again?
Oh.
And we couldn't.
Oh.
So.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But it's like, how much would an airline really pay, you know? And by law, airlines do not have to pay more than 400% of the value of the ticket, up to $1,350.
Wow. Why?
When they bump someone off a flight against their will.
A law around that at all? Do you know how hard it is to get any fucking laws passed in this country? They're wasting their time on this shit. I feel like if you pay for something and you don't get it, you should be able to raise hell. That should be the law.
If they bump you, they don't have to pay any more than 400% of the ticket.
It's ridiculous.
So if they bump you, then they have to pay. Period.
Yeah,
right?
They have to pay.
But if you, but airlines occasionally offer more if you find a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
That United says it offers $1,000 to a passenger.
That's not that much.
Before he was dragged off, screaming and bleeding.
$1,000?
They said they offered him $1,000, but he said no, and he has every right
to say... He has every right to say no. He bought a ticket.
And also to make room for a commuting crew member who needed the seat.
Mm-mm.
No.
Sorry. You should have thought about that. You can't get him on another plane?
Other passengers say the compensation offer stopped at 800. But I don't care.
Was there a guy next to him who was like, I didn't hear 1,000, I hear
1,800. Let's see. So, looking at the history of other offerings for these tickets, one woman and her family negotiated for a total of $11,000 from Delta.
Why?
She and her family.
No, I'm saying there's not. I'm saying good for her. But why can't they manage their business in a better way than
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that?
I don't understand. I mean, is it the fact that I can only guess? The airlines have so little real competition mm-hmm. and get so much corporate welfare that they actually don't give a shit about customer service at all. Mm-mm. You've flown overseas. I have too. When you fly an international carrier that's not based in the United States, you get treated like a human being.
Yeah.
When you fly in the United States on a U.S. carrier, I used to say it would be like being on Greyhound, except mm-hmm. Greyhound's actually nice.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to insult our bus system by saying yeah. the airplanes are like this.
Right. Delta offers, let's see, one customer, the gate offered $900 for one. And then this person and her family, yeah, they got $1,500 each.
Wow. What do they need these seats so badly
for?
That's what I don't understand. And why can't they figure, it's not like these people, I don't know how far in advance people buy tickets, but I have never bought a ticket last minute.
Mm-mm.
I'm usually a month ahead of time or several months mm-hmm. ahead of time. So the airline knows I'm coming.
Yeah.
And they know how many seats there are on the plane. I'm confused as to how they can't get this shit together. They have one job.
Yeah.
And that's it.
A former airline executive said it's rare for airlines to offer more than $1,350 for a voluntary seat surrender.
Mm-hmm. Well, you shouldn't be charging that much for the flight anyway. Hey, look, I will take $1,350
yeah.
and a hotel room
right.
because I'm a leisure traveler generally. I'm not a business traveler. Yeah. But in the case of this guy, I mean, he's a doctor. He said he had to be somewhere.
Yeah, he is.
I'm assuming that's related to his practice.
Yeah, but if someone buys a ticket and they're seated.
Yeah, that's the worst part. He was already in the seat.
It wasn't even like they were negotiating at the gate.
But why do they feel like it's okay to drag to touch someone in that way and be violent and drag them off the plane? It's what I don't understand about America. Like, it's weird to me. That you would think that that's a decent response to it.
Isn't this kind of tribal territorial thing? Even at work, you do it. It's like, our policy goes.
But
we said get off the plane. That means get off the plane.
But it's not even a work thing because this person is I thought the whole American thing was like treating the customers right. Because without customers, mm-hmm. you don't have anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I travel a lot and I hate flying because I'm afraid of it. But aside from that, I feel like our airlines suck.
Mm.
And whenever I have the occasion to, I'll try to fly foreign airlines. They're trying to push right now for, I think it's like, what's the one that's, there's a couple of airlines from the Middle East that apparently provide exemplary service.
Emirates is great.
Emirates and a couple of other places, they're fighting to be able to do domestic.
I would fly that.
Yes, and you hear this, United and Delta, all you guys, you suck, American Airlines. I would jump at being able to get on.
United has tiny seats.
Yes, I would love to be on Emirates. I heard Emirates is like once again, I would say they treat you like a queen, but no, they treat you like a person,
which is more than
when you get on like United. I have to fly United soon, and I'm nervous,
mm-hmm.
like because of this kind of crap.
Yeah, it used to be in days gone by that if the flight was over 2 hours, you got a meal.
Yep.
Nope.
Now they sell you a crappy snack box, and they usually run out of those right away. Mm-hmm. Well, once again, I'm like, okay, so you know how many people are on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
You could have asked people ahead of time. Before you understocked mm-hmm. what people would want.
Yeah, you used to pick that ahead of time
yeah.
when you bought your ticket.
I don't know why they can't. I mean, my thing is, because I'm a libertarian, if you can't run your business properly, shut down. Let somebody else do it.
And it's,
just move aside.
The cost of the meal is a good thing to invest in because people get hungry on a plane. They want to mm-hmm. be happy and they want to get off the plane.
And you can make money on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is that there's not enough competition. And they must be heavily subsidized. Well, otherwise, why would they be so shitty? Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at HeyYouKnowIt.com. Thanks.